Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, Cindy, we're going to have to be a little more healthful this time. We dropped whiskey on the end of the picnic. It was a bit of a mess in the beginning segment there. So let's get serious about the vegetables. Give me some vegetables that you want to play with to make cold supper with.
All right. Well, hearts of palm is not a vegetable, but I want to make a salad with tiny tomatoes or local tomatoes, and you can leave them whole if they're very small, and then they burst in your mouth and have all this wonderful sweetness and acidity, and they're fun and juicy.
Your famous old-fashioned southern chopped salad?
My chopped salad.
Okay.
And English peas, and chopped up pieces of hearts of palm. Make a raspberry chive vinaigrette, so it's raspberry vinegar pureed in the blender, with an egg and fresh chives and corn oil, a tiny bit of shallot, salt and pepper, and a pinch of cayenne, and it's this wonderful emulsified, you know, really creamy dressing that has great flavor from the chives and beauty basically from the raspberry vinegar, very pretty, fruity, and just, you know, toss all the wonderful lettuces, whatever you like, arugula, watercress if you like watercress,
just crunchy things.
Yeah, romaine lettuce for sure, because that's a sweet lettuce, and just make a wonderful toss salad. And you know, you can certainly add other things to it if you wanted to. You could add a little bit of tasso ham or a little bit of regular ham and a small dice to something like that if you want to add meat. So it's a great salad to, and it's so easy to eat, and it's just fun.
The corn oil instead of olive oil is a choice that not everybody would think was intuitive. People usually think, oh, healthful or more flavor, I want olive oil. Why not olive oil in that dressing?
Because it would overpower everything in the salad. It would be too strong. So, you know, and this is really almost like you're making a vinaigrette or a mayonnaise for the salad. So you want that mild flavor of the corn oil, neutral flavor.
There's a salad I love making each summer that's a little dependent upon the timing of produce. The melon farmer on the eastern shore that we buy melons from, and the tomato farmers, either whether in the eastern part of Baltimore County or in Carroll County, when the right heirlooms come for, you know, the yellow watermelons when they come, or the pink watermelons when they come, there's a little chemistry between the lighter tomatoes and the darker melon and vice versa, that I love to make a salad where everything is cubed up.
Mm-hmm.
And then also little slices of like little half moons of little tiny pickling cucumbers, lots of fresh mint, spearmint, that, you know, really crunchy bright, lots of fresh basil, teeny tiny bit of chive, and then goat's cheese, or when I can get it, there's a feta that's half sheep and half goat, that's a little bit fattier and richer, and that crumbled in there is just fantastic. But that's sort of like the juicy, bursting, super, you know, super bright.
Yeah, the watermelon salad. Watermelon and the tomato. And also with the herbs, you could leave those herbs whole in that salad. You don't even have to chop them.
Yeah, no, they really just kind of perfume it. The juice that's in the bottom of that, well, that's funny, when you cut all those tomatoes and all the watermelon, the juice that's sitting in the bottom of the bowl, essentially you just take the juice and you dress that back over. When you're pouring the olive oil on things, you pour the oil and then just dress it several times with a spoon. Make sure the bowl is oversized so you don't have a giant mess.
Yeah,
you're not
nice
wearing
fresh.
It on your shirt.
Mm-hmm.
But you just kind of dress it several times with that when you serve it, and that's just a fantastic thing.
Mm-hmm. And you do a dandelion salad, don't you?
Because
that's pretty unusual. I don't think a lot of people are working with dandelions.
Well, dandelion greens are strong. I mean, you know very well I like strong greens, whether it's Tuscan kale or dandelion greens or, you know, Swiss chard, something that has real texture. And If something has real texture like that, it's an excuse to do one of two things: either to do something that's a little fruity, spicy with it, because it can carry it. Whether it's like apricots are nice this year.
Yeah.
So when the peppers come, if you have a little bit of apricots that you've saved or jarred up, you can make a vinaigrette with the apricots and a little bit of a spicy chili, and dandelion greens would be terrific. Fry a little crispy shallots on top of that for a little crunch.
There you go. Sounds good. What about I think your grandmother probably used to talk about her fried chicken.
Because it was definitely a very big deal, and it was one of those things that she was usually done by the time you got up in the morning if you were staying at her place, because it was hot in the summertime, and she would make it all year long, but in the summertime it was like this mystery. You woke up, and sitting on the back of the range was all this golden fried chicken piled up.
Sounds good.
And except the necks were always missing, because she always ate the necks while she, that's when she was making fried chicken, she'd eat the, like, eggs and the chicken necks for breakfast.
Oh, that's interesting.
But she always was cooking it before it got started. Now, there's a fried chicken method that you prefer that that I'm sure the people would love to hear about. That's not crazy complicated. It's not mysterious. It's really just kind of dedication and technique that makes it work for you.
Right. Chicken breast works with this, and you make a paste with buttermilk, flour, black pepper, and salt, and that's what you actually marinate the chicken in. And then your breading procedure continues with a mixture of all-purpose flour, cornmeal, black pepper, and salt. And when you're ready to fry your chicken, you go from that sort of paste marinade that you've with your buttermilk, you go from that into the flour and cornmeal. And I fry in peanut oil in this case. And you know, what happens is there's so much acid in the buttermilk that it really kind of makes the chicken flavorful and tender. And you really want to have a good piece of chicken to fry, you know, hopefully something that's as fresh as it can be and organic and all these wonderful things that we have now available to us.
So, Sin, you developed this recipe because you're trying to do a more healthful fried chicken for a restaurant we opened a long time ago. How long does it take to fry a chicken breast?
About 7 to 8 minutes. So I usually do it in two steps. Drop it into the fryer oil and then let for about 3 or 4 minutes and let it rest. Bring it back up. And in about 2 or 3 minutes, you can drop it back down. Which also, actually, if you want to pre-cook it that way, you could have a quicker pickup when you go to serve it to your family or, you know, if you're doing it in-house rather than at a picnic. So that's a good way to cook fried chicken.
I know for me, one thing that, because I grew up with that fried chicken, like resting down at room temperature or warm back up, the crust was always like really thick. And the chicken had steamed out all the way, which means it was as tender as it could be, and it wasn't still smoking hot. I think that's one of the things. People get fried chicken, they start eating it immediately. If it's just out of the fryer, leave it be for a couple of minutes.
Definitely.
One, it's going to be hot on your hands, and two, it's just not going to be as good as it will be after at least a few minutes. Give it a few minutes to steam out.
And it's pretty good the next day, so.
What I'm curious about is the world, I have met almost no one that doesn't love fried chicken. I would love to get emails from listeners. Maybe we should ask for everyone's favorite fried chicken accompaniments, whether it's a sauce or... Because you were making fun of me. We were talking about this program because I wanted to have waffles with my fried chicken.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
But whether it's... So please email us at foremanwolf@wypr.org. Any of your fried chicken ideas, what you want on the plate with it, whether it's succotash or biscuits or... waffles and watermelon,
which
was the thing that made you make the face.
Right. Well, I've never heard of that either, but, you know, hey.
Or mashed potatoes people seem to want.
Uh-huh.
But in the summertime, you know, maybe it's just a tomato salad.
Sure.
Or quick pickles.
Mm-hmm.
I could go on, but
quick
I won't.
Quick pickles, right. Well, it'd be nice to hear from people.
So how about food movies? And there's a food movie that begs summertime food. Ratatouille.
Okay.
Yeah, ratatouille. So do you love ratatouille?
I do love ratatouille.
Yeah.
And especially when you know, you can make it badly or you can make it really well. And it takes time and care. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I was describing ratatouille to a number of young staff who've never seen it or never dealt with it. They saw the movie and I tried to use the movie to help them understand what the dish is meant to be. I said, you recognize at the end of the film all the care that the rat was putting into layering the vegetables into the dish and the order that they went in there and the way that they were cut. And imagine, you know, if you take all that care and you season all those elements all the way through, and the idea of the dish is that they melt together, they become one flavor, and you rest it at least a couple of hours afterwards and then warm the dish back up, and it's its own thing. It's not the tomato, it's not the zucchini, it's not the onion,
right.
It's
all
not
the, juices melt.
The eggplant, but everything, it becomes one thing. And literally, and then 4 minutes later, someone started describing them as vegetables stewed together, and it's the opposite of that.
Right.
So what are your tips for making ratatouille?
I think you really have to cook things separately and kind of... In the beginning.
In the beginning.
Get
everything to the same place in the cooking process.
Right. Because
get some of the water out.
Exactly. Because zucchini has a high water content and an eggplant acts like a sponge. So if you put the two together from the very beginning, you would really have something not quite right. So, you know, sauteing the onions, not getting any color, but getting those, you know, and adding salt and pepper to that, getting some good flavor, maybe cooking in butter or a neutral oil, but at some point beginning to add a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, which we almost never cook with. It's really, you think of extra virgin olive oil as something that you finish with.
But you do want the olive flavor.
You want that flavor for sure. So working with the zucchini first, making sure it's seasoned beautifully, and, you know, put a little bit of fresh thyme in the pan. Maybe put the whole stem in with the leaves on, you know, one piece. So it just sort of perfumes the oil and the food as it's cooking. I would absolutely butter poach garlic if I was adding garlic to it, rather than having it be get too brown in a pan or have it be undercooked or spicy tasting. You know, butter poach it, and you can add that to the ratatouille at the end. And you have fresh tomatoes that you're going to season again with salt and pepper. I mean, there's really, I think herb-wise, you're talking maybe basil or thyme, possibly rosemary. And your eggplant, again, definitely adding a tiny bit of extra virgin olive oil near the end of that. And then as you put these things together and you're heating it up in that dish, that's when you're kind of finishing that cooking process in the oven. That's when everything melts together and comes together.
But you have to get them where the moisture content is similar and to where you develop some flavor in the individual products without actually cooking them through or cooking them to a finished place.
Right, right.
You're getting everybody trained to be in the same spot.
That's exactly right. And that is, I mean, I think that's really essential to making it well.
It's one thing I like to do with garlic myself, instead of garlic finishing things, because like you, some people are sensitive to garlic, but you want the flavor to be there and you want the perfume to be there. Every time I go to cook the vegetables or the vessels, I always will put a crushed clove of garlic in the hot oil and flavor that oil. And then before it browns much at all, just pull it out of the pan.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have 3, 4, 5 pans going, and then the same thing with the vessel that you actually finish the ratatouille in, whether you're putting in a baking dish or you have it in a casserole or a gratin dish is probably my favorite thing to do it in.
Mm-hmm.
But flavor the oil that's going to be in that dish.
Right. You can
out
even,
of the gate.
You're saying almost like rubbing the bottom of the dish.
Exactly right.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Exactly right. And that the oil is going to permeate, and it's going to have a little bit of that, the little tiny bit of the heat and the perfume, but you're never going to have to actually eat the raw garlic. You don't want to find any little surprises.
Right.
People tend to be a little bit crazy with the garlic content on things. Now we're coming into the time when you can make the best ratatouille all with local product, right? We got tomatoes right around the corner, or probably market today. Probably the first really notable tomatoes, especially for cooking, that are good, and the peppers that you need. And I know you don't use a lot of peppers in versions of, because you find them pretty dominant.
I do. I think bell peppers are a little bit tough to deal with, but, you know, there are other types of peppers you could use. You could use the poblano, or you can use a bell pepper, but I prefer the flavor of other peppers.
And one of the ratatouille detail, the skins of eggplants you don't want in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
The skins of peppers you don't want in there.
Right.
Anything else as far as making the dish refined that people should know for tips?
I think that's probably it, but I guess probably, you know, I wonder if people know how to remove the skin from a pepper. And there are a couple of different ways. You could either just roast them in the oven rubbed with corn oil and a little bit of salt and pepper. You know, sometimes people will put them in a bag or a plastic bag so they sort of steam themselves, and then you can sort of pretty easily remove the skin. Or we will char them over a grill. I've seen people do it over an open burner. I do not believe in that, actually.
It's one of my bad habits.
Yeah, I don't believe in that. I don't think that. Oh, well, good.
I didn't go to the Culinary Institute of America.
Well, it's for sure.
I had a crazy old Danish man teaching me.
So I would rather you did it over grill and char it, and that really helps you to remove the skin, and it gives it, you know, it gives it that flavor from the grill. So you have two different processes, and you end up with two different flavors on the pepper.
And skin the tomatoes also?
I don't think you have to do that. I mean, it certainly would be nice if you did skin the tomatoes. It kind of depends on which tomatoes you're using as well. If you're using a plum tomato, you absolutely have to remove the skins, because plum tomatoes have
a
very thick skin and are undesirable.
Any of those longer tomatoes like plum tomatoes, or what you'll see them called, romas,
same thing. Right.
Or for me, always the prize for making sauce, the linguiças, which are kind of like romas that have like a wiggle to them. They're the meatiest tomatoes, and they make the very best sauces.
I can't wait until those come out. Those would be good in there. Those have a lot of flavor.
Those are like the tomatoes that you see in Catalonia. You know, there's a dish called semfaina that's essentially exactly the same as ratatouille. The pan con tomate that you love so much in Spain, in Catalan, pa amb tomaquet. The one time of the year that they do not There's a season of like 2 weeks, 3 weeks when you can get all those vegetables to make samfaina. And that's the time in all the restaurants where that's always what's served instead of pan con tomate, because they're making that dish. And they'll sometimes top that with toasted almonds, which is pretty fantastic.
Sounds great.
On a bruschetta.
And we will probably need some cheese and cured meats.
Yeah, I mean, those are for a cold supper, those are the easy proteins. What kind of favorites do you have?
With cheese, oh, gosh, I would definitely, well, obviously, you're going to avoid something that's going to melt. So you need to stay away from a triple creme.
So hard cheese, mountain cheese.
You really do. Yeah, for sure, mountain cheeses. And I would definitely have a sheep's piece, maybe something like abondance or petit basque you can find typically in the grocery stores.
Ratatouille and or samfaina and a nice piece of young manchego, like a three-month manchego.
Manchego would be great,
and
too.
And a little bruschetta would be a very nice supper.
The nice thing about manchego, it has a little bit of an acid level to it, and that really kind of helps to balance out, too. And it has that sort of dry, almost not crumbly, but almost crumbly texture to it. So it's manchego is such a great, and a little bit milder even than some of the French mountain sheep's cheeses.
You've been finding terrific cheeses, especially hard cheeses, from various farms in the UK. Any favorites that, let's say the supper is, a warm vegetable dish like that, or the dandelion salad or a rocket salad or something like that. That and nice buttered toast, and what cheese from the UK?
Berkswell. Berkswell would be so good with that. Now, that is an expensive piece of cheese, but it is absolutely brilliant, and its fat content is just gorgeous on your palate. And, I mean, Berkswell is one of my favorite cheeses that I've ever tasted. And you could also go to some of the cheddar pieces or cheddar-like pieces, Havid or Keen's Cheddar, if any of these
Keen's
pieces.
Keen's Cheddar is fabulous and has a ton
beautiful.
Of flavor.
Mm-hmm. And
a
very cellar-like. You know, it's very musty and earthy and yet fatty, and you know, has that cherished cheddar feel to it.
Something taken care of. It's funny. We were talking about that salad that I make with the watermelons and the tomatoes and all that sort of business. The thing I always want alongside of that are slices of a spicy salami from Calabria. You're asking about cured meats, and we can talk about Parma ham, we can talk about jamón ibérico and all the fancy things, but honestly, really nice handmade spicy salami from Calabria is not a giant piece of money. A couple of little slices of that and toast and that salad, and you have a super supper.
Yeah, and that sweetness in contrast to the meat is so great.
When we come back on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, a little chat about summertime beverage, and then we have an interview with the winemaker from Aveleda Winery in Portugal. All of that and more on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine.